Novell Access Manager has been announced, and our first interview is with Product Manager Lee Howarth, right now on Novell Open Audio. Welcome to Novell Open Audio, the podcast that connects the Novell user community with what's going on inside and around the Novell universe. I'm your host, Ted Hager, and today we're doing a special edition on Access Manager, which is just announced as of today, October 16th, and we're going to be taking a look at what's going on with it. And because this is a special edition for you, we're not going to be doing some of the listener feedback and those kind of things. We're going to stick straight to what Access Manager is all about and spend a little bit of extra time talking to Lee Howarth about this. So let's cut straight to the interview and check out what Lee has to say. Lee Howarth is product manager and occasional Novell Open Audio correspondent, but Lee actually manages the Access Manager product. So we're going to talk to him a little bit about what Access Manager is all about. Lee, welcome to the other side of the Novell Open Audio studio. You're now in the hot seat.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Let's get started this way, just so our listeners can immediately decide whether they want to get through the whole interview and find out about this product or not. Let's talk about scenarios where this might be applicable. What kind of problems or scenarios in an enterprise are you looking at trying to solve with Access Manager?
Okay, so the scenario is kind of, if you look at them in terms of buckets, you've got access management scenarios and then you've got identity federation. But really, they're both addressing the same kind of need, which is providing secure access to web applications. Let's just take a simple one. Imagine you're an organization like Novell, for example, and you're trying to put web applications out onto your intranet, onto the internet. Security is obviously a prime concern. And let's just take it from a basic concept of securing that web application. You need some method of validating users, so you've got authentication.
So who's allowed to actually log into that particular application?
Exactly. You've then got some kind of authorization decision that needs to take place. So there needs to be some kind of policy decisions based on that identity.
So what I'm allowed to see, what pages I'm allowed to get to, so
exactly.
On and so forth.
And then you've got all sorts of other things and tasks that are associated with securing that application. For example, if I need to make sure that the content is confidential, I need to encrypt it. So I have to put SSL certificates on that web server, you know, and there's a lot of tasks associated, and all that they're really trying to do is provide secure access to web applications. What access management products have always been about is providing really a centralized control of securing that access. And they've typically been known as anytime, anywhere access to these services. But they're controlled in terms of a user authentication, a user validation from some kind of access management system. As we went through and talked about what to do with a single web server, you know, as you've got more and more applications, obviously the tasks associated with that, you know, just grow and grow, which again is where the access management system comes in, because once these applications are part of the access management system, again, you're managing everything centrally and you can control access across all of these applications with a single authentication if you wanted to.
So is it really just all about the identity side of things, who can access and whether it's encrypted? Is there anything else to it?
Well, it's about once you've authenticated the user, you know, you could have many, many back-end applications. The experience that you're going to want for the user is really a single sign-on. You know, you don't want them to have to authenticate and provide username and password for every single web server they're going to go to. So that's where single sign-on comes into play. The good technologies are actually able to provide single sign-on to many back-end applications, even if the username and password at the back-end is different. And that's something that obviously we can do with our products.
So the basic idea is I've got this box that's sitting kind of in front of my web servers and in front of these back-end services. Authentication and authorization are all handled by that box, so that then I don't need to go into Apache or IIS or whatever my web server is for this specific product that I'm putting up. And it kind of front-ends that whole security aspect of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are different ways of doing it in terms of the approach to add access management to an organization's web infrastructure. Certain vendors out there take the approach of adding software to the web servers. Novell's approach is we create a security infrastructure that you can add the web servers to, and that's where we get this box approach so that you don't have to actually touch the web servers to be able to secure them. That's what the box handles.
So the code doesn't lay down actually on your web servers. You don't have to have anything there is what you're saying.
Exactly.
It makes no mods there.
No installation of software is required. No modification of content is required as well.
Okay. And is that pretty much the entire domain of what the product does?
Well, that's access management for the web. As we get into more details on this product, we've really taken a fresh approach at looking what access management actually means to the customer. And in the past, access management has been about web applications. But we've seen many, many customers that have been trying to provide that kind of flexibility in terms of anytime, anywhere access that they've realized for web applications. They wanted to do that also to enterprise applications. Now, what they've typically been doing is that they have installed an access management system from one vendor, and then they've also installed an SSL VPN system from another vendor. And the SSL VPN provides this access to the enterprise applications. But the problem our customers have been experiencing is that these two solutions don't communicate with each other. You know, so a user still has to authenticate to both systems. There's no sharing of session information. So any roles that are generated for your authentication, they're not shared between the two systems. So it's not a very good user experience. It's also not a very good management experience because they're managed completely separately. So we've taken that view of really bringing it together all of the requirements of an access management solution. And then we've also added what's called identity federation capabilities. I look at this in a simple view of what you're doing with an access management solution is you're providing secure access to web applications, right? And what you're doing with your typical access management system is that you are authenticating the users directly, meaning that you have got something about that user in your own identity stores. Where identity federation comes into play is that what you're saying is that I'm going to allow a user who's authenticated to one of my trusted partners, for example, to have access to these services as well. But what it means is that I, as an organization, don't have to manage all of those user accounts to provide access to the services.
Now, that to me sounds a lot like Liberty Alliance and some of the SAML stuff.
That's exactly what
it is. Is it using
that?
Or, okay, cool.
Yeah, and about Access Manager, we actually provided support for SAML 1.1, SAML 2.0, and Liberty Alliance.
And SAML is Security Assertions Markup Language.
Exactly.
It's one of these SOAP-based standards, correct?
Exactly.
Can you take just a second and explain what Liberty Alliance is?
So Liberty Alliance, the simple way to view this is because it actually uses SAML to exchange its information. But if you look at what SAML provides, it's really a common way to exchange information. But what it doesn't define is how you are going to expose that information in terms of one partner might say that I'm going to call my user identifier username. Another partner might say it's going to be called user ID. You know, and each time you establish these trusted relationships, you need to figure out and negotiate what you're going to call these attributes that you're going to share. What the Liberty Alliance did was that they provided a common, naming convention for all of the various attributes that you might want to access. And so, for example, they created what's called the Web Service Framework. And the Web Service Framework is really a pluggable architecture that allows you to plug in various profile information. The first two that they provided, one was called the Employee Profile, and the other one's called the Person Profile. Now, obviously, you can probably guess what information that relates to, but it provides a standard set of keywords. So for example, your first name could be PP colon, meaning person profile /first name. And so any kind of partner that you have could request that information. It doesn't need to be bothered about what he thinks you're going to call it. If you're using Liberty Alliance, he knows to request PP colon /first name.
So Liberty Alliance is really a set of rules of like verbs and nouns that people are going to use when they're exchanging information via SAML?
You could think of it like that. And then in addition to that, it also provides policy in the exchange of that identity. And policy in terms of it's the user that's actually in control of that information and how it's exchanged with a partner.
We should mention real quick that Liberty Alliance is actually a group of, who's in that? American Express, several of the different airlines are in it.
It's leaders from many different markets. And really what they did is they got together. They had a common set of issues that they were trying to solve. You know, and it kind of stems from how to provide single sign-on between their services. But one of the key requirements that they had up front was that I didn't need to exchange any kind of information between the two systems, personal information, to provide a single sign-on. And so part of the specification was all about using what are called pseudonyms to actually identify the user on two systems without exchanging any actual personal information like my name or anything else like that.
So back to the product itself. So Access Manager, from what I've picked up from what you're saying, is it does the job of doing a single sign-on for multiple web applications that can be served customer-facing out there on the web, or it can be on an internet or intranet, if you will, and do that for enterprise applications, web-based applications. Then also it does VPN. And what this ends up sounding like to me is it actually brings in some strengths of two different products. So I wanted just to address those past products of Novell's still out there and still in wide use. One of those, of course, is iChain. And iChain was always the product that we talked about doing this more single sign-on authenticating to multiple web servers. Does this replace iChain? Is there an upgrade path from it? Is there a difference between this and what iChain was in the past?
It will replace iChain, first of all. We're viewing Novell Access Manager as the next generation of Novell's access management product line. We're not just simply saying it's the next version of iChain purely because the capabilities of the product far exceed what iChain provided in the past. The only common capability between the two products was the web access management. You know, but now, obviously, we've got the full identity federation, we've got the SSL VPN. We also now have what's called fine-grained access control for J2E applications as well. You know, so really, it is the next generation, but it will replace Novell iChain on the price list.
Do customers end up getting the upgrade on that if they're currently paying maintenance on iChain?
iChain customers that are paying maintenance, they are entitled to a one-to-one user mapping of Novell Access Manager.
So what are these things that go well above and beyond what iChain used to do?
So iChain was focused purely on the web side of things. So it was about providing secure access to web applications.
It was a traffic cop. It sat
exactly
there, and based on identity, it either allowed traffic to flow through to a specific web server or not, as well as sliding the information needed to do single sign-on to that web server or that back-end service, right?
That's exactly right. In iChain, it was called the iChain proxy server that handled all of that for you. It was really that gatekeeper that handled that flow of traffic. In Access Manager, that the component has been renamed to what we call now the Access Gateway. But again, provides similar capabilities of authenticating the user, figuring out based on the user's identity roles, figuring out then if the user can access these back-end applications, providing the single sign-on, etc. That's really the piece that's the same between the two products. Where we go above that with Access Manager is that the SSL VPN provides, within the same integrated system, secure access to the enterprise applications, such as your email applications like Exchange, GroupWise, Lotus Notes. It provides secure access to file services, things like that. When we went back and started explaining some of the scenarios and some of the issues that customers are facing, where they have these two different products from two different vendors that don't share any session information, now having this as a completely integrated solution. And it's important to note that one of the questions we often get asked about the SSL VPN, is it something that we've developed ourselves? Or is it something that we've gone out and acquired? We've actually developed this ourselves, and the reason that we wanted to do that is to make sure that it's a completely tightly integrated service as opposed to looking like something that we've bought and bolted onto it.
You said about sharing session information in between a VPN session and one of these secure connections to a web server. Can you explain that a little bit more? It's just not really clicking for me. I'm not understanding why you would want to share information back and forth about those sessions.
Okay, so let's first of all make sure we understand the difference between a VPN and an SSL VPN. So your standard VPN, which is kind of an IPsec-based service, which provides the same kind of secure access to any application. It could be web, it really provides access to your network. But what a VPN does is it requires you to have a pretty large client installed on your machine. It's not really that anytime, anywhere access type of service that we wanted to make sure we offered.
It's anywhere, anytime, as long as you've done all these steps beforehand.
Exactly.
And configured it properly.
And it's more difficult for like an IS&T group to provide access management for enterprise applications, you know, because often a lot of these VPN technologies, it's really, you can maybe limit it to certain networks, but it's more difficult to get down to specific IP addresses, specific port numbers. And when you try and do that identity-based, that's what a lot of these VPN services are missing. So an SSL VPN is something that doesn't require a client. Now, when I say doesn't require a client, there is actually a very small client that is delivered.
But it's like a browser plugin?
Exactly. It's in the form of either an ActiveX control or a Java applet. And so when you launch up your browser, when you authenticate to Access Manager, for example, and you are accessing all sorts of different web applications, with that same authentication, you could cross over to then get access to your email applications as well, because you could have brought down this SSL VPN client just because of you've authenticated to the system. And then based on your roles, and this is where not only are we sharing authentication information, but we're sharing information about who you are as a user, your roles, etc., that will determine what applications you're going to be able to access in that backend. Because you're probably not going to just say, have access to the whole network. You might want to say, if I've got a role of manager, then allow him access to this HR application, for example.
And when you mentioned a Java plugin or an ActiveX control on that, I'm presuming ActiveX control for the Internet Explorer-based users, and the Java-based plugin would be for Firefox, Opera, or those kind of things, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so you said it supports ActiveX and Java. ActiveX, obviously, IE, as Ted mentioned earlier. Java, what does that mean? What browsers are supported and what OSs?
So we test with... obviously, Firefox, I mean, that's the key one that you want to support nowadays. We test with Firefox running on Windows, Mac, as well as Linux. And we tested both, obviously, SUSE Linux, as well as Red Hat.
Okay, so that's Mac OS, that's Red Hat, that's SUSE, and Windows, and then Firefox on all those platforms, I assume.
Yeah, so what we typically want to support with this product is Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Safari on Mac.
Okay, and this leads on to my next question, which was, a little while ago I said it sounded like an amalgamation of two different products. You've clarified that there's some things that make this different from iChain. The other question, though, of course, is Border Manager, a product from Novell that was out for years and still a lot of people use, had a VPN component as one of the four major components in that product. You described the VPN as quite a different type of VPN, so I'm assuming that that's kind of where the difference is. Border Manager's VPN was the classic, you must have a client on your system. This is much lighter weight. Does it actually translate, though, all the way? Can you do most operations with this VPN, or do you still, for some possible uses, have to have a full-scale VPN?
You're exactly right in terms of describing the difference between the Border Manager VPN and an SSL VPN that we have within Access Manager. There may be some instances where you would still require a VPN. So, for example, the SSL VPN...
A full-scale VPN, you mean, right?
A full-scale, yeah. The SSL VPN is... really focused on TCP and UDP applications. So anything that is using that protocol, you're fine. But if there's things like ping, you know, just to be able to ping resources, that's using the ICMP protocol. And so that's something that isn't supported today on the SSL VPN service.
But even FTP then should work through this, right?
FTP should work. Telnet, you know, we typically, when we're demonstrating the product, I will show FTP, I'll show SSH to backend applications, I'll show access to GroupWise. That actually provides a great demonstration because you can start off by just trying to launch each one of these before you've logged into the system. They all can't connect. Logging to Novell Access Manager, the SSL VPN is initiated. And again, a nice looking client, I can actually view policies, I can figure out what I can and can't access anyway. And then just click into these various applications, and I then get access very easy.
So, sorry, I just want to make sure that I'm real clear on this. So, I'm real familiar with normal VPN clients, obviously. So, normally, if I want to hit something internally at Novell, I fire up one of our internal VPN clients, and then anytime I hit something with the normal, you know, preamble that's on all of the internal Novell IP addresses, those packets are then routed through the VPN client and set through an encrypted channel back to Novell, and I mean, it's just as if I'm in the office. So what you're saying is once I've got this plugin installed and once I'm authenticated, is then all that traffic routed through that stack through the SSL connection, so it's the same basic same concept?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay, cool.
But from the administration side, what you've done is you say, based on the user's role, allow access to this set of IP addresses, for example.
And specific protocols,
yeah.
ports, or what have you.
Yep, exactly. And then based on that, the client will know to look for these specific requests to these addresses and then routes it down the SSL VPN tunnel.
Oh, very cool. Just like it does with a normal VPN client.
Since this is part of the whole identity and security side of Novell, let's talk about also the other major products in that area. You've got just recently the acquisition of eSecurity. You've got the Sentinel product now, which is for mostly for auditing and paper trail type stuff. You've also got the identity manager side of things for doing integration of identities. You mentioned federation on this. So how does this fit into the other products that are out there? Are you guys actually getting toward a comprehensive solution, or is this now another thing that just sort of bolts on the side somewhere?
Well, let's take Identity Manager first of all. You know, we're talking there about provisioning and workflow system and how we can actually combine and integrate these two products. They're still two separate products. Is that workflow in particular is one area where we can have an integration between the two products that is kind of when a user requests access to something, you know, which is typically if they're going to be denied access, they want to maybe get access to it. What we can do within Access Manager is actually within the page that is displayed, which denies the access, we can actually now redirect the user to a URL which can initiate a workflow. And that workflow could then say, oh, wait, you're trying to get access to this resource. Why, first of all, do you think you should have access? And all this information will then go to the line of business manager who's in charge of the particular resources that you're trying to access. Now, this workflow is handled by Identity Manager. And based on that manager either approving or denying that request, an entitlement can be added to the same identity store or identity stores that Novell Access Manager is using to determine your access rights. You know, so that's where we can integrate between Access Manager and Identity Manager is through the workflow capability.
Okay, so Access Manager can actually hook into Identity Manager, kick off the workflow because somebody's getting denied something that they've requested access to. Somebody can then approve on the back end. This person now has access. Bang.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. A lot of the role information that's generated, which filters through and provides your access to various different systems, could have been provisioned by Identity Manager anyway.
One other thing I think we want to clarify on this, does that mean that the workflow actually goes to a sysadmin? You didn't say system administrator. You said actual like a line manager or something like that is the person. So this isn't an IT person that gets bugged by the workflow.
No, this is somebody that really owns the resources. And how it would typically appear is if I say I want to request access to something, that manager is probably going to receive an email to say that somebody has requested access to this particular set of resources. Within that email, he may receive why the user is requesting access, and he can simply say yes or no. An Identity Manager has got a full browser-based service as well that lets a manager see all of the requests that have come in for him, that he needs to say yes, allow, or no, deny, continue to deny.
Does he get an email thing as well, or does he have to actually go into that tool?
No, he gets an email to say that request has come through.
Okay.
Now, at the same time, I assume that I can plug this directly into Sentinel as well, right? So that we have audits and logs of this whole thing that's going on.
Yeah, because as soon as you get some people out, you know, as soon as IT defers somebody from the approval process, you know, hey, I'm not going to do this. Let's kick it out over there. Now you got to know who did what in the network a lot more because you can no longer just point to Aaron in IT or whatever.
Exactly. I mean, what we've done with Novell Access Manager, I mean, based on timing, the e-security is a fairly new acquisition. We provided support, and we actually do include the full version of Novell Audit, right? So you can actually use that, install its license for use with the product, so you don't have to buy it. What eSecurity has done since Novell acquired them was we've added to the product the capability to really service requests that would normally be going to a Novell Audit system. So I can send events from Novell Access Manager to a Sentinel system and just consider it as a Novell Audit system. Right, so all of these events, we just continue sending to like an IP address, thinking it is a Novell Audit server, but really it's a Sentinel system that's been coded to accept these Novell Audit events. So that's the integration.
Can we talk real world here for a minute? I want to hear real example of where this thing can be used.
Okay, yeah.
Can you like maybe, I know we're actually running this code internally. So if you can just give us a quick overview of how actually a lot of our listeners are actually hitting the box today and they don't even know it when they come to authenticate through support and such. Can you give us a quick rundown of some of the ways that we use this internally?
At Novell, any employee, they'll always access the InitWeb system. We're obviously gradually moving these services over to Novell Access Manager. They're currently running on iChain. We're moving them over gradually. As we just type in interweb.novell.com, for example, at Novell to access our InitWeb system, we are prompted for a name and password. When I enter my credentials in there, that is actually iChain or Access Manager that is requesting that information. It then goes and validates that identity against whatever backend store has been configured for it. And that is typically then the only authentication request that you will see at Novell.
Yeah, I'll only be asked my username and password for once, regardless of where I'm going.
Exactly. But what you don't see at the back end is that as these web pages come up and you've got, for you, for example, Aaron Quill, and all of these personalized information, it's actually the access management system that is sending information to that back-end application so it can personalize it. Not only is it personalizing it, but it's obviously providing a single sign-on for you as well into that application.
And it's not just Novell stuff, we should say. I mean, it's if I click on my benefits, I might be sent over to Fidelity's website to see what my 401k balance is, or I might, you know, be sent over to Aetna or whatever. But when I go to Aetna's website, my group number is already plugged in. The insurance level that I've signed up for is already plugged in. All that stuff about me, Aetna already knows about, so I don't have to re-enter it and find the password that I use just for their stuff.
It's always interesting trying to discuss the benefits of kind of access management technologies, because to a user, it's very rare that you see it. You know, you're logging into a system, and then that's all you see. You don't actually see all of the back-end activities that are going on, the single sign-ons, the passing of identity information, etc.
All the baling wire and duct tape that's normally there.
Yes, exactly.
And that actually brings up a really good question, because if the whole idea is getting a smooth experience for the person who's authenticating, whether it be one of your enterprise users or one of your customers out there in the internet coming to your company's site, that's all cool. But then the guys that have to support this, usually when something's really good for the end user, it's bad for the administrator. And usually if it's really good for the administrator, it might not be so well thought through for the end person. You've put together a decent, compelling argument for it being good for the end user. So does it suck for the administrator?
No.
Doesn't all this complexity make it difficult?
No, it doesn't. And the reason so is because we've actually spent a lot of time with this product working on the administration interfaces. It's really like point-and-click types of things where I'm just defining sets of resources, defining within policies, things like single sign-on and that type of thing. And these are policies that can be reused. For customers of iChain, where they've had multiple administration consoles to deal with in the past, now with Access Manager, everything is centralized into a single view. It's based on the iManager technology. Now, when I say based, it's not just iManager, because iManager is really focused at manipulating directory objects.
And for a lot of people that don't know what iManager is, we should point out that is the management console on eDirectory and a lot of Novell-based products for quite a while. So
exactly.
That's what we're talking about with iManager.
Exactly. What we've done is we've enhanced iManager, because there's a lot of components within Access Manager, you know, that could be located anywhere in the world. And so we need within this administration tool the ability to configure and monitor those boxes, but from a central view. And also for iChain customers, those that have got a lot of iChain proxy servers that are perhaps protecting the same set of resources, they're going to love some of the new capabilities where I can group access gateways together. Then one single change will get distributed out to all of the access gateways in the group, again, simplifying the administration. Now, one other point to bring up, as we start looking at the various authentication sources supported within this product. We support, obviously, eDirectory, but we also support Active Directory. We support Sun One, and these are just the LDAP stores.
So you're saying if my corporate directory is on any one of these platforms, it's cool. We can take Access Manager and we can just point it over to that corporate directory.
Exactly.
If Sun One is there as well, that used to be Netscape directory server, so I'm going to assume that there's probably even a good chance it'll work with, say, Red Hat directory server or anything like that, just about any LDAP directory?
Well, we need to be a little bit careful with it, because of what we do for security reasons is that we actually track things based on the GUI. And each of
the globally unique identifier,
exactly.
Correct?
Exactly. And each of the stores handles the GUI slightly differently. And so that's why when you're configuring the product, you actually say whether this particular store that you're configuring is Active Directory, eDirectory, or Sun One.
Oh, so we know what the GUI's going to look like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. So those are the ones that you've tested this with, because those are the big directories that are out there.
Well, not exactly. All LDAP directories necessarily have a GUI.
Right.
And we can actually use any combination of those, you know. So for a set of resources, you could actually make it go through and look at all of the directories in turn to figure out and try and find a user. You know, so if you've got, for example, acquisitions, rather than trying to bring in all of the users from a new company that you've acquired, I could simply point to the identity store and still provide them then this authentication to my service, single sign-on to applications, etc. When we start talking about authentication sources with this product, you've got the three LDAP directories that we support, But then you've got SAML 1.1, 2.0, and Liberty Alliance. Now, that's six basic sources for authentication. Now, it's very rare that you're just going to have six. I could have many, many partnerships using Federation. I've probably got many different identity stores that are supported. And this is where administration could be a nightmare. I mean, managing policies that say, go look in Active Directory for a user's job title, also go look in eDirectory, receive something from a SAML assertion. You know, all of this, all you're trying to do is to create a role of job title equals manager, for example, or a role of manager. What we've done to simplify the administration again is that we allow the administrator to map all these various different authentication sources into the Liberty Alliance web service framework. And so then all that the administrator does is he defines one policy that says, if the Liberty employee profile job title is manager, then give role manager. You know, so he can this is a great feature because he can just keep adding more and more authentication sources and he doesn't need to change his policy. It's a great feature.
Right. All of these could actually be based on policy. Very
exactly.
Cool. So if I want to download this and check it out, what do I need to do to download it, to check it out, to learn about it, and get it up and running?
It's available now. I mean, you can go to the Novell.com, the download site, and you can actually download a version of this that will allow you to test it.
Novell.com/download is where people can find it. We'll link to that from the show.
White papers, background, what sort of stuff's available to help me get up to speed?
Well, that's still being built up. All of those white papers, etc., are going to be available. And we will provide links, obviously, as part of the show.
Absolutely.
Is it fairly easy to do? I mean, is it something I could probably download in a morning, you know, get it up and running in my lab, at least so that I can start to do a proof of concept, kind of figure out what I'm doing?
It is. I mean, you need to be aware of a number of different things. It's like, first of all, there's a number of components. One of them is the identity server. The identity server is responsible for authentication within the product. That runs on SUSE Linux Enterprise Server version 9.
Okay.
All right.
Not 10.
Not 10.
Why?
The reason being is that this kind of product, it's a security product, requires the test cycles that go with the product. It's almost probably above 3 months. It's over 3 months. So we needed
to
have...
been shipping that long on 10.
Exactly. So we need to have a stable platform that we could keep testing on. And that's why initially it's going to be version 9. Now, obviously, we're going to support 10.
Right, as soon as we can go through that same rigorous testing, right?
Yeah, and we have started testing it already, but for just the timing just didn't work out for us.
Okay, so I've got one server running SLES 9, and what's actually running on that?
That's called the identity server. So it's really the service that handles the authentication, role generation, etc. Some of the things that you need to be aware of when you start to build this system up, DNS naming is very important.
Sure.
So when you access a resource that the access gateway is protecting, for example, you're actually redirected to the identity server, and it's the identity server that requests the authentication credentials from you. And within there, it's very easy to configure, but it does need to have a name for the identity server and the name for the resource, and the identity server and gateway need to know about each of those domain names.
So the other thing you could do is if you're just doing this in a small lab deployment, you could pass around a single hosts file
exactly.
to all machines and fake some DNS that way.
Yeah. What's also very important is time. We talked about the security assertions markup language before. When you communicate using SAML, and the reason we're doing this between even the access manager components is for security reasons, you know, so that you are sure that everything is digitally signed and encrypted, you know it's a resource that you trust is requesting all of this information. SAML is kind of time-bound when we start talking about artifacts, again, for security reasons. And so everything really has to be within 5 minutes of each other. Obviously, time zones are taken care of, but it has to be within 5 minutes of each other to be sure that it's coming still from that trusted source. So that's another thing to be aware of.
So in other words, somebody really ought to use a trusted time source, like, say, time.windows.com.
Yeah, exactly.
There's another server that I need?
There's an access gateway.
Okay, and that's the one that actually sits in the flow?
That sits in the flow. What you can do for testing purposes, as we go later on with this release, we will probably provide this as a supported option, but you can actually take the Linux access gateway, so that the access gateway is available on both NetWare and Linux.
Okay.
The difference between the two is the Linux version, I can host other services.
Sure.
Right. And so what I can do as part of the install, this is not supported for live environments, but you can do this for your testing, is I can actually install the identity server, the access gateway, and the SSL VPN all in one go.
Okay.
You know, again, just to help people test the product.
Okay.
And that can be installed on the same system.
So just so that I can understand where my processing power is being eaten, I've got two boxes. Where do I want my heavy box? Thrown at the gateway?
Your identity server will typically be a heavy box.
Okay.
The access gateway, you're probably talking about a box that's got 3 or 4 gigs of RAM in. Which is a typical recommendation. This is for obviously for a live environment.
Right.
You know, I often do my tests on a VMware system. I give it like 700 meg for a server that's running all three of the components.
You're not exactly high utilization when you're doing that, right?
No, this is just me opening my browser and saying, look what I can do.
From everything you've described, including things like Sentinel, being able to hook into it and stuff, it sounds to me like you've got a pretty large-scale deployment going on here if there's a multiple boxes. Does this actually apply just for large enterprise customers? What's it scaled down to? Who would be like bottom-level interested in this? Small business, medium business, about what size, you think?
As with previous products, as with iChain, you know, the customers that we'll have for this range from the small all the way up to the enterprise to the massive business to consumer or government to citizen type of implementations. You know, it can be multiple boxes, but as I said, you can combine some of these services on a single box. But the key thing what it's doing is, again, it's creating a security infrastructure that I can add as many applications as I want to this infrastructure. You know, but it could be a couple of hundred users, could be less than that. But it's providing something that simplifies that whole deployment of a secure service.
I love to ask people questions that I get asked all the time to see how my response is compared to somebody who actually officially knows. So whenever I've been out talking to customers about the previous version of this, about iChain, I always get asked, well, isn't that what Secure Login does?
So that all comes down to the fact that we provide single sign-on. You know, Access Manager provides single sign-on. But so does Novell Secure Login. The difference is that iChain, as well as Novell Access Manager, is providing web single sign-on only, and it doesn't require a client. So Novell Secure Login is a client-based service, meaning that I have to have something deployed on my workstation that's going to submit all of these credentials to these backend applications for me.
Secure Login is more of like a Windows-based application that I install on my Windows workstation that then every time I am prompted for a username and a password on any system, it then takes that information, squirrels it away in the secret store or in a secure portion of the directory so that I'm never asked for that username or password. But it's really kind of an endpoint on the user's workstation. That you're
not
doing
in the flow type thing.
Right. We're talking in the flow. We're talking these are people inside your company, outside your company, browser-based, whatever.
It's just a browser. That's the only thing you need to enable a single sign-on is a standard browser. Now, one of the great things that shows really tight integration between these two products, between Access Manager and Secure Login, is you mentioned Secret Store. And so both of these products can actually share the same set of credentials that are held within Secret Store.
You know, cool.
Yeah, so for example, I could be accessing GroupWise sat in my office, and the Secure Login client can do the single sign-on for me to the Windows GroupWise client. Then when I launch Web Access, all I've got is a browser. Access Manager is able to go and extract that same set of credentials and provide that same single sign-on.
It's intelligent enough to know that even though I'm coming through a different front end, I'm really hitting the same back end, so the same credentials are going to be valid.
Exactly.
And we should point out just really quickly that Secret Store is actually an eDirectory-based technology that does the job of making it so that you've got a store of passwords capable on a user account that has non-repudiation from an administrator. An administrator can't go in and look at the attributes that are stored there. So you could have 20 different passwords there, and the only way that an administrator can look at it is going to flag the end user that, hey, somebody looked at this. So with that, Lee, thanks very much for coming in. This has been a great, it's actually 40 minutes that we've been talking.
Wow.
And I think we've only gotten to the beginning here, because we're going to have you back for a couple other editions here where we can dive down even deeper into Access Manager, right?
Definitely. We'd love to do that.
Look forward to seeing you again, Lee.
Thanks a lot, Lee. And that's a wrap for our Novell Access Manager first interview. We've got a couple other things coming up that Lee's helping organize for us that will go into depth on some of the components on Novell Access Manager. Watch the website so that you can post questions if you have other questions as follow-ons to this interview or for some of the subjects that are coming up regarding Novell Access Manager. Again, it's www.novell.com/openaudio.
Remember, you can rate this episode or any episode of Novell Open Audio by going to the same website. You can also post comments on any of the shows that you might want to give us feedback about and make topic requests for upcoming shows. All those things are available, again, at the website. You can also interact with us directly by emailing us openaudio@novell.com. That's it for this episode. Thanks a lot for joining us. We'll see you next time.